mission. Ground battle, aerial battle, defense against projectiles, etc. Her unease grew. And then it was over. Raven was biting her lip so hard she could taste blood. The crowd was roaring, whipped into a frenzy by the monstrous beast's performance. The dust began to settle as Shanalyn and Ryder completed the final tallies, taking into account each dragon's performance in each area of testing. Raven saw the moment Ryder realized the truth, her dark cheeks paling. They'd passed. Not just Heyron, who had, once again, achieved the highest score. All of them. They'd all passed. Before Raven could consider the ramifications of such a surprising result, a messenger approached, marching up the steps and whispering something to Goggin. The large man turned toward her, raising an eyebrow in question. "Can I let him through?" She nodded, immediately recognizing the young messenger who had delivered the last message. As he approached, his hands holding out another scroll sealed with red wax, her blood ran cold. The wax, as before, was marked with a sickle. 65. The Southern Empire, Calypso. Rhone Loren. As he dismounted, Rhone added, "Ride on a Guanic," to his mental list of things I never want to do again. Gingerly, he rubbed his backside, wondering whether he should use his life mark to heal the numerous bruises. He opted not to, remembering how easily Gwen had discerned his power from just such a frivolous act. At the same time, he wondered whether he would ever be able to sit down again. Stretching, he scanned the streets of Calypso, surprised at the swell of nostalgia he felt, as if being reunited with an old friend. Not that he had any of those, of course. This wasn't just the place he grew up, but the place he'd found himself. The place that started it all. A strange urge to aimlessly wander the streets, haggling with nut roasters and other merchants, tugged at him, but was swiftly chased away by the Guanera's firm grip on his elbow, steering him toward the palace gates. A barked command by two more mounted Guanera, and the gates were hauled open by enormous Guanic pulling chains. Inside, the dusty ground was marred and churned by hundreds of Guanic footprints. Thick columns, set with mosaic tiles of many colors, supported a wraparound shelter that offered protection from the harsh sun as one made their way from the gates to the palace entrance. At that point, there were a dozen more pillars, each a work of art. Not gaudy, but beautiful, tasteful, the tiles hand-cut and individually set within the mortar, each placed at the perfect angle to catch the sunlight, giving them the appearance of sparkling drops of dew. Rhone wondered whether anyone ever appreciated them anymore. He suspected not. From his experience, Calypsian royalty were like that, aloof, arrogant to a fault. Not of the people, but above the people. He hoped to use this weakness against the Empress. Inside the atrium, the art continued. Each sandstone wall was inlaid with tiles, forming images from Calypsian life. The Guanero astride their Guanic, marching through the streets. An Empress standing atop one of the pyramids, kneeling in prayer to the gods. The unburning tree, radiant, gods blessed. Rhone looked away, focusing on the alternating black and white tiles beneath his feet. They turned left, the open-air corridor providing a stunning view of the pyramids, which rose like perfectly formed mountain peaks stabbing at the sky. In the red afternoon light, their shadows stretched long and thin, dark fangs splitting the Southron Peninsula to shreds. They turned left again, and the Guanero stopped, holding Rhone back by tightening his grip. Before him was a broad area ending at three steps and a small dais. Atop the platform were four chairs, thrones. The one in the direct center was the largest and most impressive, scaled like dragon's hide, the maw of a winged beast rising from the back. The Dragon Throne, Rhone thought. It was also the only seat occupied, its resident studying an unfurled sheet of parchment intently, her blue-black hair cut short. The Guanero cleared his throat, and the woman looked up, her eyes darting to Rhone. For the briefest of moments, Empress Raven Sands looked deeply perturbed. The moment passed as she sat up, straightening her back, rolling the scroll and tucking it away at her side. "Who is this?" she asked. She studied him with interest, as one might inspect an unusual insect alighting on a flower. Her eyes were intelligent, and Roane noticed how she picked out details. The guanero's grip on Roane's elbow, his lack of belongings other than a small satchel, the dust on his boots and trousers, evidence of a long journey. The guanero spoke. "He crossed the bridge early this morning. I was tempted to toss him in the dungeons, but he claims to have information you might be interested in."
"What information?"
"He was unwilling to share the details with anyone save you, but it's in regards to the eastern defences at Faria. I don't know whether to believe him, but I didn't want to risk it given the present situation."
"You've done well in bringing him to me."
"Thank you." Her gaze drifted back to Roane.
"Approach."
In tandem, they moved forward, the short distance feeling like a great journey under the shrewd stare of the Empress. A few steps before the dais, they stopped.
"Your name?" the Empress asked.
In the unpredictable manner of memories, Roane was unexpectedly taken back to the first time he encountered Gareth Ironclad, how he'd dodged the very same question with quips and ridiculous banter. It almost made him laugh. Instinctively, however, he knew that such a tactic would not be nearly as effective with this ruler. The Sands were known to be serious women, quick to anger and action.
"May we speak alone?" Roane asked.
Raven Sands' eyebrows slowly stretched toward her brow.
"You would leave me without the protection of my man.
I am unarmed and not prone to violence. In fact, I abhor it. And from what I hear, you are more than capable of defending yourself."
"True, but I am also no fool. If you prefer to speak in privacy, there are other ways. He will stopper his ears."
The man didn't look happy about it, but he marched over to a small stone shelf secured to the wall, where a clay dish sat. From it, he withdrew two balls of a waxy material, twirling them between his thumb and forefinger. He plugged each ball into his ears, pressing them firmly to flatten them.
"Does that satisfy you?" Raven asked.
Roane nodded.
"I am Roane Loren," he said,
angling his lips away from his chaperone so they couldn't be read. He'd expected shock, or denial maybe, or even anger. Instead, all Roane got was a thin smile and a raised eyebrow.
"Indeed," Raven said.
"You certainly fit the profile. And there have been rumours..."
"There have?"
Roane immediately wished the words back. Any control of the conversation he'd begun with was now lost.
"Of course. With the stream network expanding every day, word travels fast across the realm. You have been missing for a long time, son of Gil."
"I was here in Calypso. Well, for most of my life."
"Right under our noses, it seems. And then?"
He would have to leave some gaps in the narrative, but hopefully they would go unnoticed.
"I decided to see the world. I headed east."
"You crossed the Skara?"
He shook his head.
"Via boat. I ended up in the barren marshes accidentally. It was there I was taken prisoner."
"By whom?"
"Gareth Ironclad." She pursed her lips, as if he'd spoken a vile word.
"Go on."
He continued with his story, leaving out crucial details, like his fate mark and what he'd done at Raiders Pass, how he'd saved Gareth. He ended with the same lie about how the Easterners had released him to spy for them, first in the west and then the south. Raven said,
"You lie well. There is truth to your story, but not all of it. Why should I believe anything you say next?"
"You are a wise empress," Roane said, trying to mask his surprise at having been discovered so easily. Where was the Sand's arrogance he'd been counting on? Thus far, he'd seen only a shrewd, reasonable young woman. A different tactic was necessary.
"I have no love for the Easterners. They are warmongering bastards, intent on controlling the land from east to west, north to south."
"And what would you call the Calypsians?
We don't exactly have a history of peace either."
"Time to test the waters."
I choose the lesser of evils whenever I can."
His words, as he'd suspected they would, had the intended result. Raven laughed loudly.
"An unusual strategy, that one. Insulting the Empress of Calypso. I only want to save Calypso from utter annihilation."
Her laugh dried up.
"Speak your mind or be gone,"
she said, anger blazing across her face.
"Ah," he thought, "there you are.
You are planning to attack Faria, correct?" It was a guess, perhaps a long shot, but with the East harassing the Calypsian borders, eventually the Empire would have no choice but to hit back, and they weren't the kind of people to pull punches. They would go for the heart. She blinked, and he knew his conjecture was on point. Even if the decision to go to war hadn't been made, it had been discussed.
"You know nothing. I know that an attack on Faria is the worst decision you can make."
Even as Roan spoke the words, he felt the futility of them. Had words ever stopped a war? The violence that had become a part of daily life in the Four Kingdoms felt like a wriggling snake in his grasp.
"Why?"
Roan held his breath for a second, then slowly released it.
"I'm willing to trade my information."
She licked her lips thoughtfully.
"I could have you locked up. An enemy prince falls into my lap. What do you expect me to do?"
"You won't do that. If you've heard rumors of my reappearance in the West, then you also know Rhea's stranglehold on the throne is complete. I have been away from Night's End for too long. I have no power there. And my sister would rather hang herself than pay a ransom for my life. If you lock me up, the information will be locked up with me."
"You sound very certain of yourself."
The comment gave her own pause. It was true.
When did I become so confident? When I healed Gareth. When, against all odds, Rhea released me to find my destiny in the south.
Roan knew there was an unseen hand at work, both in his life and in the broader Four Kingdoms. For some reason, that knowledge calmed the inner storm that had raged inside him from the moment he ran away from the only home he'd ever known. With a start, he realized the Empress was staring at him, waiting for a response. She was frowning.
Well, yes. There is little certainty in this world, but I know I have a place in it, just not the one everyone expects from a prince."
Her eyes drilled into him, and Roan got the distinct impression she was looking at him like a puzzle to be solved.
"What do you desire? Wealth? Land? A position in my empire? Those are mere trifles to an Empress of Caleb."
Roan shook his head.
"I care not for such things. I require nothing so grandiose. Simply safe passage to Citadel, and an irrevocable pass to enter the archives, coming and going as I please."
Again, that look.
"A strange request, Prince of the West, but one I can hardly deny. There is nothing in Citadel but dusty, moth-eaten tomes, and my dusty, moth-eaten Aunt Windy. It is done. But know one thing. If you cross me, there will be consequences. The sands have long memories. Now tell me what you know."
Roan paused for effect, clinging to this penultimate moment where, once again, fate or luck or something greater seemed to push him forward, either toward victory or a great precipice. Then he said,
"If you attack Faria, your entire force will be destroyed."
66. The Southern Empire, Calypso. Raven Sands. Raven felt like her enemies were encircling her, their blades jabbing for her throat. More concerning was the fact that each of her foes seemed to be cloaked in mist, unidentifiable. The second note she'd received had been more specific than the last. "Renounce the war with the East before the moon's kiss, or Whisper's life is forfeit." She hid her feelings, however, behind a mask of indifference, flicking a bored hand in Roan Loren's direction, as if talk of the annihilation of her people was as uninteresting as talk of the weather.
"Ever heard of the Dragon Massacre?" she asked.
"Of course," Roan said. "More than half a century ago. The Calypsians were defeated in Faria.
Pushed back, yes. Defeated, no. Our Dragonia laid waste to the Iron City. Thousands of Easterners, humans and Orians alike, were slaughtered. It was one of the single greatest military victories in modern history." Though he tried to hide it, Raven could see the disgust written all over his face.
"I abhor violence," he'd said.
"Exactly," Roan said, and something about the calm with which he spoke gave her pause. Did he truly know something she did not? It was because of the Dragon Massacre that Faria's defences were improved.
Improved? How?
Traps. Dragon-proofing. That sort of thing.
Dragon-proofing?
This fool had clearly never seen a dragon in action. "I can give you all the boring details if you want. But the moral of the story is that attacking Faria is a bad idea."
"Whispers, life is forfeit. Renounce the war. Before the moon's kiss. If only it was that easy."
"What would you have me do?"
"Be patient. Let the Easterners come to you. Fight them on your terms."
She could see the tension in Roan's body, like his very existence hinged on her decision. Why was he so intent on delaying war? It felt strange that this Western prince's goals seemed precariously close to aligning with her own. She wanted more than anything to hold back the Calypsian strength, to force the Easterners to enter the desert, which would surely become their tomb. But despite being a Sands, a Southron empress, sometimes her actions were out of her control.
"Thank you," she said evenly. "I shall consider your advice. Now take your leave of Calypso. I shall have orders prepared for your safe arrival in Citadel."
Roan looked surprised at her response, almost like he'd expected the entire encounter to be fraught with risk.
"Let him be surprised. I shall have him watch like a hawk. Whatever he seeks in the City of Wisdom will be mine."
"Thank you," he said, turning stiffly. The Guanero seemed to realize the private conversation was over, fumbling to retrieve the wax from his ears. He looked disappointed when the Empress handed down her orders, but didn't argue.
"As you wish."
With that, they departed, Roan offering a final glance over his shoulder before vanishing around the bend. Exhausted by her facade of self-control, Raven slumped into the seat, wishing, not for the first time, that the throne was more comfortable. She reached back and plucked the scroll from her side, accidentally chipping away a portion of the bloody wax that was still affixed to its edge. She reread the message, though she'd already memorized it. And, for the 10th time, she did the math in her head. The moon god and goddess would kiss soon, in just over a fortnight, sealing Whisper's fate if she didn't find a way to stop whomever was sending these messages. In the meantime, she would delay the war as long as possible. A difficult task, especially now that the Dragonia had passed the testing. The pressure was building. Raven could feel it like a great weight on her chest, forcing the air from her lungs. The War Council would meet again the following morning, but first Raven needed a distraction, else she would never be able to sleep. She stood, heading for the largest of the great pyramids, known as Calipa, the home of the Dragonia. With ravenous delight, Ciri gobbled up the morsels Raven tossed her. As each rabbit reached its peak, fire burst from the young dragon's maw, blackening the meat before it slipped between her rows of dark fangs. She stretched her sinewy, red-scaled neck appreciatively, crunching loudly. Raven smiled at the ease with which she could satisfy the dragon. Later she would give Ciri a belly rub to complete her reward for performing so well in the testing. If only humans were as easily placated. Ever since the testing was complete, rallies had been held in the streets, most Calypsians in favor of war, swift and absolute.
"First the East," they shouted, "and then Fanes. Who can defeat the Dragon Empire? None!"
as if winning a war against nations that had stood for hundreds of years was as easily accomplished as crossing the road. Ryder approached, her day's work over. Most of the dragons were sleeping, or on the verge of it, having been fed and watered after a long day. Though the aging dragonmaster smiled, Raven had known her long enough to tell when it was forced. Lines of worry cut across Ryder's forehead and sprung from the edges of her eyes, as if she'd been frowning for most of the day. She probably had. Raven wondered if she looked just as tired.
"I've been putting in extra time with her," Ryder said, gesturing at Ciri.
"Thank you," Raven said, genuinely appreciative. "It showed during the testing.
She's a remarkable creature, as clever as any dragon I've ever trained. I'd bet on her against any of the others."
"Truly? Even Heyron?" She nodded.
"Yes. Don't get me wrong, sheer size and strength matter, but her intelligence is unmatched."
Raven couldn't argue with that. Her belly full, the magnificent beast lay down, her head resting against Raven's side. The message was clear. "Scratch my chin." Raven complied. One did not argue with a dragon. And soon Ciri was purring in contentment.
"Shanalyn has been pushing all of the dragons hard," Ryder said.
Although the Dragonmaster said it casually, Raven could feel the weight behind her words.
"Is that a bad thing?"
Ryder started to speak, stopped, and then started again.
"No, not exactly. But his bond with the dragons and their masters feels different than it used to."
"Different how?" Ryder shook her head.
"It's hard to explain. The Dragonia favor him, except for Ciri and Heyron, of course."
Raven's eyes narrowed.
"What are you saying? Speak plainly." "Keep him on a short tether," Ryder said. "He's dangerous."
"That's absurd," Raven said.
"He's worked for my family for 3 decades.
"Yes, for your mother.
And then my sister, and now me."
"It's probably nothing," Ryder said.
"The testing has me on edge."
Raven sighed and rested her hand on the Dragonmaster's arm.
"I'm sorry. I trust your counsel. I will tread carefully around Shanalyn.
You need not fear. He will not pressure me into any decisions I do not want to make." Ryder's body language softened, as if satisfied by the response.
"What are we going to do?" she said,
a jarring reminder of the next day's war council. Raven glanced around, making certain the other Dragonmasters had left for the day, especially Shanalyn. She lowered her voice.
"We delay," she said. "If the Guarneros succeed in the border skirmishes, that will give us reason enough to be patient."
Ryder nodded.
"And if they're not successful?"
"How long will it take to prepare the Dragonia for war?" Ryder shrugged.
"A week, perhaps. A fortnight at the most. No one expected them to pass the testing this early, not even Shanalyn. Battle armor must be constructed. Even finding enough leather will be a challenge."
"Good," Raven said, nodding. "It would have to be enough time. Uncovering her sister's would-be assassins was her priority. Only then could she deal with Rhone Loren's warning. Not that she was particularly concerned about the eastern defenses. There was only so much one could do to fortify against dragons. Still, prudence told her to be cautious, even when everyone else, save Ryder, seemed ready to rush to war. Once more, she gave Ciri a scratch. The animal purred in delight.
67. The Southern Empire, north of Calypso. Rhone Loren. Truth be told, Rhone hadn't expected his meeting with Raven Sands to go as smoothly as it had. At best, he'd expected to be thrown into the dungeons, if only because he was a Loren. At worst, he thought he'd be killed on the spot. Instead, he was, despite his objections, once again on the back of a guanic, its thick, bony hide adding bruises to his bruises. Unable to take it any more, he slowly healed the wounds, letting his life mark pulse slowly on his chest.
He'd been handed off to another guanero, a giant of a man who'd introduced himself as Goggin.
"You must be an important man indeed," he'd barked.
When Roan had inquired why, the man had only laughed loudly. Goggin rode the most monstrous guanic roan had ever seen, its clawed feet leaving deep impressions in the hard ground. Any time the lizard looked at him, he had the distinct impression it was sizing him up, trying to decide whether it could swallow him whole. Still, this companion was better than the last one. At least he didn't aim pointy objects at his eyes, nor deal in thinly veiled threats. Instead, Goggin preferred stories and japes, most of which centered around his many failed marriages.
"Did I ever tell you about my third wife?"
the large man asked now, as if they were two old friends shooting the breeze. Roan counted on his fingers, pretending to seriously consider the question.
"No, your second and fourth, yes, but not your third. That's a story I'd very much like to hear."
"Ha! Good man!"
Goggin bellowed, slapping his guanic's back. The beast opened its mouth and yawned, as if it was used to such behavior from its master.
"Anyway, here's how we met."
The long, convoluted story took the better part of the evening, until long after the sun had vanished behind the horizon, leaving a trail of purple-black in its wake. Despite himself, Roan had laughed loudly several times, most notably when wife number three had called Goggin a bastard of the highest order, and chased him from their dwelling with a scimitar.
"A good woman, she was,"
Goggin finished, sniffing sadly.
"That's one I wish hadn't gotten away."
A moment of silence passed slowly. But then he clapped his large hands and said,
"Time to make camp and drink the night away."
Making camp was a loose term which basically involved unfurling bedrolls under the stars.
"Too hot for a fire,"
Goggin declared, handing Roan a heel of warm, spicy bread and a leaf-wrapped strip of spiced meat. Roan bit into the bread, relishing the yeasty, zesty taste he'd enjoyed as a youth. There were a lot of things about Calypso he could complain about, but not the food. "You can have my meat," he said, handing the leaves back to Goggin. The man looked as if he'd been given the sun itself.
"Did I mention you're a good man?"
he said. "Once or twice," Roan said, though Goggin didn't seem to hear, already chewing loudly, washing down each bite with a swill from a waterskin. Roan recognized the distinct odor, sharp and spicy as it filled his nostrils. Simpra, a strong drink served in most taverns. Most Calypsians enjoyed a taste or two with a meal, but this man slugged back mouthfuls like water. When he drained the last few drops, he burped loudly. Then he reached into his pack and retrieved a second skin. This one he emptied into a clay bowl, which he placed in front of his guanic. The beast lapped at the drink greedily.
"Monster likes a bit of Simpra now and then,"
Goggin explained. Although Roan thought this man's definition of a bit was a little off, he kept that to himself. Then, inexplicably, the guanero extracted a third skin of strong drink from his pack, handed it to Roan and said,
"Drink!"
with all the gusto of a round-bellied tavern keeper. Roan sniffed the skin, recoiling as the acrid smell assaulted his nostrils. If anything, this was even stronger than normal Simpra. Goggin bellowed out a laugh, slapping his thighs.
"Good stuff, eh? My own recipe. Brew it at home. My fifth wife grew tired of the smell, so she took off. Chased her all the way to Terragon, I did. Ha!"
His expression turned serious once again, and in a lower voice he said,
"Now drink, son. The nights are wasting."
As politely as he could, Roan said, "Thank you, but I'll stick with water."
"Bah! We're off duty now, and you've been as dry a companion as the dust beneath our feet. Drink or wrestle me. Those are your choices."
Roan gaped at him, uncertain as to whether he was being serious. Wrestling a man as large as Goggin would result in his bones breaking in several places, so, holding his breath, he took a small sip of the dark liquid.
"Fire, burn, scorched acid, fire!"
With a gasp, he spewed a thin stream of liquid into the dust. Goggin roared with laughter. Roan couldn't help his own laughter, which poured from him like rain from a grey cloud. And, he had to admit, Goggin's Simpra recipe was damn good. He took another sip. This time he swallowed it, relishing the burn. Half the night later, a large portion of the Simpra was gone, but both men were very much awake. "That group looks like an ore monkey," Roan said, pointing at a cluster of stars in the southern portion of the night sky. He felt warm all over, both giddy and calm at the same time. He was fairly certain that if he were to cut his skin, he would bleed Simpra rather than blood. The thought made him giggle and then hiccup, which made Goggin slap him on the back as if he were choking.
"It also looks like my ex-wife," Goggin declared.
"Which one?" Roan asked. He'd meant it as a serious question. He was having trouble keeping track of all the ex-lady Goggins, but his question only made the man burst into laughter once more.
"I'm not sure," the large man said. "They all blur together these days. Strong women with angry faces. Ha!"
Roan had learned much about the man he travelled with, though he wasn't certain how much he would remember in the morn. For one, Goggin wasn't just another Guanero, but the captain of all Guanero, a prestigious position on par with the Shiva, or Master of Order, in Calypso. No wonder he'd made the comment earlier about Roan being an important person. Still, it surprised him that the Empress would provide him with such a high-ranking escort, rather than just sending a low-level foot soldier. The captain of the Guanero slumped back onto his bedroll and yawned. It seemed the strange night had finally come to an end. A moment later, he was snoring. Roan stretched and unleashed a yawn himself. Staring at the sky, he wondered whether Gareth, high in his tower prison, was looking out at the same stars. At the same time, he felt bad that Gwen, confined to the dank, dark dungeons of Night's End, wouldn't be able to see any stars at all. He sighed, watching the moons continue their nightly jaunt across the sky. Their paths would come close, but not cross. A near miss. Soon they would kiss, as the expression went. A week, perhaps, or a fortnight at most. "By then I will be able to help my friends," Roan vowed, even as he drifted off into a Simpra-induced sleep, as deep and restful as any in recent memory. 68. The Southern Empire, Calypso. Raven Sands.
"Whisper," Raven said, gently stroking her sister's shoulder. Dancing lines of sunlight were just beginning to form between the hanging guanic bones threaded across the opening to the sleeping quarters. Her sister stirred, her lips murmuring nonsense in her sleep. She looked so peaceful. Raven wished she could let her sleep, but they didn't live in that kind of a world. Plus, they were sands. Sleep was a luxury they could scarce afford. "I need to prepare her. She needs to be ready to rule." War was coming, and Raven couldn't ensure her own survival. The thought made her feel strangely calm. "Am I prepared to die for my people, my country, my sister?" Yes, she knew. Yes, yes, yes! Finally, Whisper's eyelids fluttered open. "What is it?" "The War Council will soon convene. You need to be there." "No." The answer was swift, certain, final. "Whisper, I said no," Whisper said. "It's not up for discussion. You can force me, if you wish. Otherwise, go away." Unlike the other day, when she'd sounded older than her years, now she came across as a petulant child. "She is caught between girlhood and womanhood," Raven mused. She thought about how her martyr had handled she and fire growing up. "You have a voice," she said. "All you have to do is use it." Whisper blinked. Clearly she'd expected to be forced. "I've made my opinions very clear," she said slowly. "Progress?" "To me, yes, but not to the Council. There you've been as silent as a sleeping lamb. They all think you're in shock, voiceless and broken. My voice works fine, and I'm not broken.
I'm hurt, but not shattered like everyone thinks. I know. I don't think that. Aren't you hurt? The question was so simple, so innocent, and yet it burned through Raven like a hot knife. She'd watched fire die, watched her burst into flames in her final act. First their mother, then fire. Yes, she was hurt. The only difference was that an empress couldn't waver, not for one second. Her mother had taught her that. Like you, I'm hurt but not broken. You don't look hurt. I'm a Sans. Whisper released an exasperated breath. People love to say that. Like a name defines who a person is. Raven frowned. It does. It must. Whisper shook her head, her slightly mussed hair shifting from side to side. I reject that. We can be better. We can seek peace. There doesn't have to be any more death. Raven's heart broke slightly. Despite all the tragedy Whisper had been forced to endure in the short years of her life, she still clung to the hope that they could simply live their lives, sniffing flowers, painting, playing games, ruling with feather-soft wings and not the hardened, clawed wings of the Dragonia. And although Raven knew her sister was being naive, she allowed herself to dream of such a life, just for a moment. And then gone. Speak your mind at the War Council, Raven said. She stood and left. Shiva, Raven said as the man entered her quarters. The dark-eyed Master of Order in Calypso bowed stiffly.
Your Magnificence, I received your orders to attend you in your quarters, but I must voice my objection. This is highly unusual. People will think—
Were you seen? Raven asked.
Of course I was seen. There are 100 guards between—
Good. Let them think what they want. Rumours will shift with the desert sands no matter what we do.
But—
She held up a hand and he snapped his mouth shut. If the guards believe you are coming here for another reason, a more scandalous reason— She offered a seductive smile to illustrate her point. Then they won't suspect the real reason. His brows rose.
Which is?
I need you to be Whisper's personal guard, but secretly. No one can know that you're protecting her, she most of all. The Shiva shook his head.
I don't understand.
Will you protect her?
Yes, of course, but it's highly unusual. I am bound to Calypso, not to the throne.
Calypso is the throne.
Why me? You have 1,000 palace guards at your disposal.
I don't trust them.
Then Goggin—
The commander has another mission. You're my last option. Please. His lips pursed, but it wasn't a rejection.
I will do this thing. Whisper is safe with me.
Thank you. She spoke the last two words tersely, blasting from the room and into the hot morning air. Inside, she was thinking, thank the gods. Raven tapped her fingers on the scaled arm of her throne. Her war council was smaller than before. Goggin was notably absent, escorting Roan Loren to Citadel as she had commanded. His enormous form usually took up half the room. Ponjut was on her mission to the Skara with her Guanero. Also, Whisper had yet to arrive. Twice Shanalin had cleared his throat, anxious to begin the council. Twice Raven had ignored her. Whisper would come. She had to come. And then she was there, sweeping through the private rear entrance and settling into her seat with all the grace of the princess that she was. Unlike the previous times she'd attended the council, her eyes settled not on her feet, but on the eyes of each person in attendance, eventually alighting on Raven's. Raven was barely able to conceal the smile that tried to bloom upon her lips. Whisper nodded once, and Raven returned the gesture before addressing the council. As you all know, the Dragonia have passed the testing. With flying colours, it seems, Shanalin said, beaming. There was a gloating note to his tone. So it would seem. This changes everything, Shanalin said. Does it? Of course, Your Magnificence.
With a fully trained Dragonia, none can oppose us. Surely you have heard the voices of your people in the streets.
I have, but Sans women refuse to be swayed by public opinion.
Shanelin shook his head.
What are you saying?
I'm saying we must be patient. Haste will only hasten our demise.
Roan's words rattled around her head.
Your entire force will be destroyed.
Whisper was staring at her, but she refused to meet her gaze, lest she give away the fear she felt every time she looked at her sister.
She thinks I might be killed if we go to war, when in reality it is her life in danger.
Shanelin, as Raven had expected, refused to be rebuffed so easily.
Haste will catch our enemies off guard. They think they can poke and prod without retribution. They think Sun's and Fire's deaths have weakened us. Watch your tongue!
Raven's eyes snapped to the side, for the rebuke came not from her, but from Whisper, who was on her feet, her eyes fiery and focused.
You will not use the dead as part of your argument for war. You, Dragon Master, do not rule this land. The Sands do. And as long as we have breath in our lungs, we will not be bullied into action.
Raven would have kissed her sister if they didn't still have an audience. Instead, she watched Shanelin intently. At first, she thought the Dragon Master might push his luck, diving into another argument, but instead, he bowed his head slightly and said,
I apologize. I am merely anxious for the Dragonia to serve the Empire.
Still, his eyes remained dark, and she thought she could detect a sneer in his tone.
And they will, Raven said, in good time. For now, we wait to hear from the Guanero sent to the Skara.
As you wish.
Shanelin's deferential response was cut off sharply when the sound of feet slapped the tile floor, coming closer. All heads turned toward the entrance to the council chambers, where a messenger appeared, his eyes wild with a mixture of excitement and something else.
Fear,
Raven realized.
Oh, gods.
Speak, she said. Please.
He gulped down a breath, and then said,
Word has arrived from Kesh. A stream.
He paused, swallowing thickly, as if his next words were caught in his throat.
What has happened?
Raven said, though she already knew.
The defeat was complete. The Guanero sent to the Skara are dead.
69. The Southern Empire, between Calypso and Citadel. Roan Loren. When he opened his eyes, Roan released a sound more animal than human, halfway between a groan and a growl. He jammed his eyelids shut, though the sun, which was already a quarter of the way toward its peak, continued to burn across his vision. His head pounded. His muscles felt weak. He groaned again, wondering whether Gwen would consider it an abuse of power to use his life mark to cure the after-effects of a night of drinking. Probably. And yet, there was nothing for it. As warmth seeped from the three-leafed marking on his chest, the dull throbs in his skull began to lessen before vanishing completely. His muscles and bones recovered, too, gathering strength like a bucket collects rainwater. Why had he drunk so much anyway? Why had he drunk at all? A chuckle answered his question, and when he opened his eyes, Goggin was grinning at him. His eyes were clear, and he looked refreshed, seemingly unaffected by their night of madness.
We need to teach your body to hold its drink. I thought you would sleep the entire day. Ha! Do not fear, my young friend. A few more nights like that and you will build a tolerance.
Roan didn't want to build a tolerance. He wanted to quit being a fool and get back on track. While he had been drinking himself into oblivion, Gwen and Gareth had been passing another night in captivity. I'm a damn fool, he thought. He could almost hear Gwen's answering response.
Yes, yes, you are.
And Gareth's.
Next time you drink like that, I better get an invitation.
How many days until we reach Citadel?
5,
Goggin said, and Roan groaned again.
If we're lucky.
Roan massaged his temples, though his headache was long gone. In the end, it took 6 days, or perhaps 5 and a half, as they arrived at midday. Each night, Roan had barely managed to fight off Goggin's pressure to partake of
the drink of the gods,
as the Guanera commander liked to call his homemade Simpra. He was only granted a reprieve when, finally, on night 3, the drink ran out. Goggin had tipped the last skin upside down, peering inside as if someone was playing a nasty trick on him. Like maybe the Simpra was not gone, but hiding.
Pity,
he'd said, before rolling over and going to sleep. After that, the journey had picked up pace, as they rose earlier and made camp later. Now, sweat-sheened and dusty, the City of Wisdom appeared in the distance, almost like a mirage, the hot air making its white spires appear to shift and blur. Thank the gods, Roan muttered.
No, thank me,
Goggin said, jabbing a finger in the air. Thank you, Roan said. Despite the Simpra incident, as he called it, the man had delivered him safely to Citadel, as promised. Twice they'd come across dangerous-looking men pulling carts filled with various knick-knacks. But both times the men had given Goggin a quick look and then turned their path in the other direction.
Banditos, Goggin had said. Shame they didn't want to fight. I could use the practice.
Roan, on the other hand, had been relieved. Now he leaned forward, eager to reach the city that boasted the largest collection of history and books in all the four kingdoms. Compared to the Western archives, it was a vast treasure trove that had the potential to solve the mysteries of Roan's very origin. Gwen's, too, as well as all the fate-marked. Would he learn what really happened to the Western Oracle? And her son? The very thought made him jab his ankles against his Guanic's sides, urging it to go faster. The beast glanced back darkly. If anything, it slowed its pace just to spite him. He would be happy to be quit of the temperamental animal. Slowly, pace by pace, Citadel began to come into focus. Tall, narrow spires split the sky, their faces as white as the snowy mounts that flanked Raiders Pass in the north. Oddly, the first thought he had was, I wonder who cleans the outside of those towers. Beyond the city was a vast body of water, sparkling under the sun. Dragon Bay. His last memory of the sea involved nearly being eaten by dragons after narrowly escaping Plague Island, and then almost drowning. After all that, he'd met Gareth Ironclad. It was almost ironic, in a way, that he would find love so soon after dodging death. He blinked away the memories, refocusing on the city. Beneath the spires were buildings with arched roofs, also white, an abrupt change to the blocky beige sandstone structures of Calypso, with which Roan was so familiar. And then, set between the spires, an impossibly large dome of glass, catching the sun along its edge as it curved into a perfect hemisphere. The Citadelian Archives, Roan said, his voice taking on a note of awe.
Aye, Goggin said, also known as a whole bunch of parchment.
Roan glanced at the man, guessing he'd never opened a book in his entire life. You aren't interested in history?
My history, yes. The history of a bunch of dead people? Not so much.
And this, Roan thought, is the crux of the problem. Those responsible for leading, for commanding armies, for ruling, had no interest in studying the mistakes of their ancestors. The scholars, on the other hand, had their noses stuck so far into their books that they barely noticed the passage of time. The world could be crumbling around them, and they would merely flip to the next page. I must change that, Roan said. I must be the bridge between the scholars and the leaders. Only then would things change. Again, he was surprised at his own convictions, not his ideals, which were long held, but his belief that he could change things. Somewhere between leaving Calypso and returning, he'd gone from being a jaded skeptic to a believer. A believer in what, he wasn't certain. But he was determined to find out. They entered the city just as the sun began its long descent toward evening. Roan immediately noticed how different the city felt. There was still a sense of hustle and bustle, aye, but it was muted. People scurried hither and thither, many of them clutching crumpled scrolls to their chests or bags bursting with parchment. Most of them were dark-skinned Calypsians, but Roan also spied several grey-skinned, broad-foreheaded dreadnoughters, as well as a red-skinned Terran. Some stopped to purchase sustenance from vendors, but they placed their orders with whispers rather than shouts. There was no haggling, only a brief handover of the required number of silver dragons, and then they were on their way. Roan was shocked that this city was part of the Calypsian Empire. He might have been in a foreign land, for it held none of the familiarity from his childhood.
"Can't even find a decent watering hole," Goggin muttered.
"I'm not thirsty," Roan said. "Nor hungry."
"Nor fun," Goggin said. "Our stay here is going to be dismal indeed."
Roan frowned, tugging his gaze away from the exquisite white buildings long enough to consider Goggin's choice of words. "Our stay." "You're, staying in Citadel. Don't you have training or battles to plan?"
"If only,"
the man bellowed, drawing stares from several passers-by.
"I'm stuck with you for the foreseeable future. Truth be told, I'd rather be pit-fighting in Zune."
Roan looked away. This complicated things. He felt a fool for not realizing that the Empress would never allow a Western prince the luxury of wandering the Archives unchaperoned. But Goggin? "Do you know the way to the Archives?" Roan asked. Now that they were in the city, the rounded buildings and tall spires blocked all view of the massive dome they'd seen from a distance. Goggin gestured blandly at the people scurrying well clear of their vicious steeds.
"Follow the bookheads," he said.
Roan nodded, just noticing that other than the merchants, everyone was on the move, and all heading in the same direction. No one stopped to eat the food they bought, which all seemed to come attached to long wooden twigs, ideal for snacking on the move. In Calypso, such behavior would be the equivalent of sacrilege. Food was meant to be enjoyed over the course of several hours, accompanied by simpra and good conversation. Also, unlike the Calypsian capital city, the roads of Citadel weren't laid out in even blocks, and they weren't sprinkled with dust. Instead, they were white stone blocks that somehow stayed clean, long curving roads occasionally intersected by straight narrow pathways that all seemed to angle in the same general direction. When they reached the first such alley, a bottleneck of pedestrians clogged the entrance, funneling from both directions.
"We'll never get the Guanic through there," Goggin said. "At least not without someone losing a limb or two, ha!"
"We can go on foot," Roan suggested, hopefully.
"And leave our Guanic here? The bookish folk of the City of Wisdom are unaccustomed to handling these leathery monsters. There will be carnage."
He paused thoughtfully, as if warming up to the idea, because it involved destruction.
"Nay, Empress Raven will have my hide."
Roan blew out in frustration. "Then how do we get to the city center?"
"We wait."
As they waited, Goggin procured several bottles of Simpra.
"Enough to pass a day of boredom," he said, tucking them away in his pouch,
"and enough food to feed an army." There were fried peppers, on wooden sticks, of course, chunks of braised meat and various grilled vegetables, also on sticks. There were loaves of spicy sweet bread, a rice dish spiced with mixer and cinnamon, and a variety of nuts roasted with honey. The rice and nuts were the only items not speared by sticks. Rather, they came in easy-to-carry paper funnels that could be tipped directly into one's mouth. Despite his impatience, Roan enjoyed everything, feeling fuller than he had in a long time. To his surprise, Goggin didn't even offer him the Simpra, knocking back two bottles on his own. Apparently, he'd finally given up on Roan as a drinking companion. When they finished, the alleyway had nearly emptied out, like a thin river drying up after the sun comes out. Goggin grunted.
"Single file,"
he led, entering the road on his massive Guanic's back, its sides a hair's breadth from scraping against the walls. Roan's steed had more room to spare, but still, if anyone tried to pass in the other direction, the logistics would be impossible to manage. True to form, however, traffic seemed to flow only one way this time of day, and they cleared the passage quickly, spilling into a large circular courtyard. From other similar alleys around the edge, more pedestrians trickled forth, each aimed directly at the huge structure in the centre. The Citadelian Archives was a circular building constructed of enormous white stones mortared together. A shaded area ringed the structure, the overhang supported by smooth, broad pillars. Above the overhanging stonework was the dome, rising like a giant eye, reaching a point higher than all other buildings in the area, save for the white spires piercing the clear blue sky.
"Nothing for it," Goggins said,
eyeing the archives with the wariness one might exhibit upon seeing an old enemy. His remaining Simpra bottles clinked as he steered his guanic toward one of the many entrances. Rather than dismounting at the large arched entrance, like Roan had expected, Goggin drove his steed inside, nearly trampling a squat, bald man as he skittered out of the way. Roan, having no other choice, he still didn't truly know how to steer his guanic, fell in behind him. Inside, wood-panelled walls blocked further entry. One of them slid closed behind the bald man as he slipped past. Sitting before the panels was another man, this one at a desk cluttered with numerous unrolled scrolls of parchment, held down at their corners by smooth white stones. He stood, looking deeply perturbed by the presence of two very large animals in his atrium. His dark head was ringed by a layer of grey hair.
"No beasts allowed," he said sternly,
pushing a pair of spectacles down his nose to glare at them. He pointed at a sign which, sure enough, echoed his sentiments. Roan wondered how often ignorant Guanera rode their guanic inside the archives.
"I'm here on urgent business from the Empress herself," Goggin said.
He yawned, looking bored.
"I do not answer to the Empress, but to her aunt."
"Aye, Windy," Goggin said. "Go get her."
"Excuse me?"
The man removed his spectacles and waved them at the Guanera commander.
"There is protocol for such things. Appointments to be made, rooms to be prepared, preparations to be—"
He seemed to search for a word, coming up with nothing.
"Prepared."
"Or you could just get her before Monster gets hungry."
Hearing its name, the Guanic licked its lips with its thin, snake-like tongue. The man's righteous anger shuddered away.
"I cannot leave my post. I shall send her a message, though tracking Windy down is sometimes more difficult than lassoing the stars."
With that, he sat back down, replacing his glasses on his nose, peering at a paper with a complex-looking map with strange markings. He reached for one of the panels, opening it to reveal a mess of cords, each designated by a different letter and number. Searching through them, he found the one he was looking for, giving it a slight tug. Nothing happened, but he offered them a satisfied smirk, closed the panel, and then opened a book. Goggin and Roan stared at him in silence for a moment.
"Is something supposed to happen?" Roan wondered.
A scholarly-looking woman entered behind them, flinched when she saw the guanic, and, thinking better of it, retreated. Casually, Goggin extracted a bottle of Simpra from his pack, popping the cork out. The man looked up from his book.
"No food or drink in the archives," he said.
Goggin ignored him, taking a swig, smacking his lips in satisfaction. He plugged the cap back in the bottle and returned it to his supply.
"I don't know who you think you are,
tired of waiting," Goggin said,
slinging himself off his mount, landing with a heavy thud.
"Did I ever tell you about my first wife?"
Roan couldn't tell whether he was talking to him or the gatekeeper, so he didn't respond. The man stood again, blocking Goggin's path.
"You can't go in there without a pass."
In one swift motion, Goggin yanked two creased sheets of parchment from his pouch, handing them to the man. From a distance, Roan could just make out sentences formed in stiff lettering and an official-looking hand-drawn symbol, the red sun rising over a dragon. While the man perused the passes, Goggin slung open one of the wooden panels, which slid to the side to reveal a narrow staircase.
"Protocols!" the man screamed, his face darkening in anger. "You can't go in there until I have cleared your arrival and entered your names on the official register."
He trailed off as footsteps announced the arrival of at least two newcomers from the stairway. Goggins stepped back to let them pass. They halted on the landing. A boy and a girl. There was something familiar about them.
"We're here to escort the commander and his guest to second daughter Windy," the girl said.